This is the Feudal Podcast with Zach and Ian. If you would like to get a hold of us, please send an email to ian.strope@gmail.com. Thank you and enjoy. Never have NORAD again. I'll never plug it into the headphone jack instead of the mic jack again.
You learned your lesson tonight.
Maybe.
You found... Gosh, man, a lot of people have covered this song.
Mandy?
We're talking about Mandy. I've heard it many times, and most prominently I'd heard the... when Homer sings, "Oh, Margie, you came and you brought me a turkey."
Uh-huh.
And that one where he was going to cheat on her with Michelle Pfeiffer. And then he decides to not
have
to do it.
That one was just on, like, twice.
Oh, was it really?
It was weird.
It's been years since I've seen it, but I've seen that one a lot. And so that one was just stuck in my head. And it's got a different cadence to it because he's saying different words than, you know, "Oh, Mandy, you came and you gave without taking," or something like that, which is just a different, you know, amount of syllables in the words. So yeah. I heard it again today, and it had, like, slightly different chord progression,
too.
And
Good Luck Chuck?
No, I heard it, actually, at the Dollar Tree.
Oh. You mean on, like,
so I had a
Muzak?
Yeah, they had Muzak, but it wasn't Muzak. It was, like, real. And then they played the really annoying version of "Hooked on a Feeling" with the Uga Chaka
that's terrible.
And what was the creepiest part about it was, as that part started, I looked around, and all the employees that were unloading stuff were all mouthing it. The Uga Chaka, Uga. It was really creepy. It was like I was in a cult.
It's the Hemingway quote, right? You know. The world breaks everybody, and some people are stronger where they've been broken, right? Is it the end of Seven? Come on, Internet. You can correct that quote. Okay, so we're going to do some viewer mail now. Viewer mail. Viewer mail. Viewer mail. And so, like, we got this a long time ago, and we're just now reading it, but we'll be more quick about viewer mail. I'm calling it viewer mail. I'm just going to call it viewer mail. I'm sticking to that.
Don't explain the joke, man.
It's not even... The thing is, I didn't realize it was a joke till just now.
Like, you were actually just thought it was viewer mail.
So when I first,
if they have really vivid imaginations, they might have been viewing this.
This is dated August 22nd.
Okay.
So I'm just going to read the parts that are relevant to the podcast.
Go for it.
This is from a friend of mine named Krista, who's working up in Portland now. Hi, Krista. If you're still listening, you probably aren't. You've probably given up on us and our crazy podcast. Anyway, so she wrote, "Hi, Ian. Listen to your podcast. I like them. Except that it can be frustrating at times to be able to listen to a conversation, but be unable to interject my own opinion." Well, that's why you can send in your opinions or comment on the blog. You can just do that whenever you want, and we will read them.
Well, see, the main point, though, I'd like to interject myself here while she's interjecting,
mm-hmm.
is that we do this in this sort of format instead of doing some sort of, like, public forum. Like, we could do some sort of, like, town hall meeting. We could sit there and speak loudly at Starbucks and have people be like, "Shut up! I liked Good Luck Chuck." And instead, though, we're doing this in this format because we don't want people to interject and change our...
We do.
Listeners. But what I'm saying is we don't.
Okay, so you have it there, straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
If you hadn't already figured it out, I play being kind of an idiot. He's the dick. That's the way it goes.
I'm not playing.
And neither am I. okay, she says, "Oh, well, good job.
You're a wily pre-med. What are you talking about?"
No, I'm not a pre-med anymore. God.
Once a pre-med, always a pre-med.
Okay. "Hey, your friend is right about one thing. You should read House of Leaves. I think it's a mistake."
Yeah.
This is way back. This is like podcast two.
Yeah.
"I think it's a mistake to reject something without giving it a fair chance." Well, that's the character I'm playing on the podcast.
That is one of your biggest flaws.
I'm a big old judgmental guy. "Or before fully understanding what the concept behind it is." Once again, yeah. "I read the book a couple of years ago. In theory, it's brilliant."
True. It depends on how you look at it. There's a couple different ways. One of them is that it's academic satire, or mm-hmm. satire of academia, in terms of all the footnotes and everything like that. And then another way is it's just a really strangely structured
horror film.
Yeah.
She says, "In practice, it's brilliant."
Yeah.
"Just a really involving, intriguing read. It's a sort of labyrinth. You're jumping backward and forward, going from footnotes to appendices and back and forth between these four levels of realities. Your friend forgot to mention the fourth layer. There's also the editor, who is nearly invisible, but every now and then makes a note about what
the
guy is
also
trying to publish and the thing was given him. Seriously, this book is on my top 10. And incidentally, I just bought the second book he was talking about from my friend Leslie, but I haven't read it yet. Okay, then the P.S. There's a bunch of other stuff.
Does this chick's letter ever end?
Not relevant. There's a bunch of stuff that's not relevant to the podcast that I won't read.
Oh, personal, private stuff.
No. Just not relevant to the podcast.
Just, I got a new red bicycle today. It goes really fast.
Okay, then here we go, because this is the one we talked about, dragons. She said, I don't think the dragons seen lately look stupid because they're CG. It's totally possible to make a gritty CG, scary-looking dragon with CG animation. I think the people producing them are most likely morons. Well, probably not the artists themselves, but rather the people they have to go to design for design approval for. So, there you go. Thank you, Krista, for sending us an email, even though it took us, like, almost 2 months.
Email of the week.
To read it. We will be more forthcoming, or not forthcoming.
That was definitely the best email we got so far.
More quickly. That was the only email I think I've really got. I've got...
So today we watched a movie.
Yes.
Would you like to say what the movie was?
The Kingdom, the Peter Berg film. Peter Berg, he did Very Bad Things. He recently did Ladder 49. He seemed like he did one other one. He did Friday Night Lights.
Uh-huh.
Pretty reasonable. You probably would know him more as an actor. He's
Chicago Hope.
He was on that Chicago Hope show. The movie doesn't really have that much wrong with it. It's a pretty good movie. It's not what I expected. I thought it would be very very political and subtle and have a lot of political subtext about, like, how bad the imperial U.S. is. And at the beginning, it starts with this sort of, like, audio montage, the timeline that matches to monochromatic computer visual effects, and then also shows clips of, like, stock footage.
Basically giving you a background of the whole U.S.-Saudi relationship.
Yeah, starting in, I think it was it 1908 or 1932?
Something like that, yeah. Whenever the Saudi nation was created.
Yeah, something like that. And because it's trying to set up this whole thing that, in the end, is pretty irrelevant to what the real story is about. The real story is mainly about, it could be kind of displaced in just about any scenario. It could be Hong Kong. It could be, you know, in a weird sense, it could be,
you know,
like,
it was,
with just, like,
it kind of ended up
have
being,
a presence.
It kind of ended up being a masturbatory, look, we can win a war on terrorism. And it was set in a different country than Iraq to try to get, it was almost like, here's evidence that we can do this if we, mm-hmm. you know, if we need to in another country.
It was, but it had that sort of, the ending did have,
oh, no,
sort of the message was kind of a,
it muddled it up a little bit.
And it keeps repeating, yeah.
The
writer, I made a note because I went to IMDb about this. The writer's name is it's Carnahan. He's the brother of Joe Carnahan,
okay.
the guy that did Narc.
Right.
And he's also wrote the screenplay for that Robert Redford movie, Lions for Lambs. Which
right. One thing I noticed in the trailer for that was that they're all, every single time you see any of the actors featured, they're in the same room each time. So Redford is only in scenes where he's speaking to these students before they go out to be soldiers. Cruz is only seen in his office talking to Streep. It's going to be one of those movies. This is going to be a play.
It's going to be a collection of scenes that are basically just sort of set up to say.
It doesn't look that good to me. I think Redford's a good director, so he'll probably do better than I'm expecting. But
it's possible, unless he's really just trying to do his big political statement movie.
I think I like Peter Berg a little better than you do as a director as well. I think he did a really good job in terms of just behind the camera, in terms of shot selection and stuff. I didn't have as much of a problem as you did with the shaky cam.
I didn't have a real problem with the shaky cam. I just, this movie was, like, executive produced by Michael Mann, and so, and it had Jamie Foxx in it, and I know that one of the best roles, for my money, that Jamie Foxx was in was Collateral, which Michael Mann directed. And we were talking about this earlier, both in Collateral and in Miami Vice, the way Michael Mann put together and shot those movies, you really felt fully immersed in the environment. And that would have been a great plus in this movie. I mean, Peter Berg did an all right job, but he did a lot of establishing over-the-head camera, see-the-whole-city type stuff that, those are omniscient views. They're not, like, on the ground. They're not the way... If Michael Mann had directed the movie, I think I would have enjoyed it more, but you're right, that is sort of a...
Yeah, you can't.
It's a trivial statement.
Yeah, you can't do that with films.
We leave that alone. One thing Peter Berg did do a lot of that, I mean, I thought I had a little bit of a problem with, but not, it wasn't a big problem, was he uses a lot of, not extreme close-ups, but pretty reasonable close-ups. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of that, and you get introduced to characters through close-ups a lot more quickly. These are all stylistic things that don't have anything to do with the real, like, context or quality or content of the film. So what I'll say about the film, so it starts off, it's got this whole, like, it seems like it's going to be pretty political with the way it's doing the newsreel stuff. And then it gets right into this, baseball game, the softball game that's going on with these Americans that live in this section, this cordoned off section of Saudi Arabia. And, you know, all hell breaks loose, there's explosions, and I won't really spoil that because I think that's pretty powerful that you see how things go down. And you kind of get hit with something, and then you get hit with something again. It's kind of relentless, and that has some dramatic effect for sure. But then what happens is you start seeing all these characters are introduced, but they're introduced, there's a lot of text. This movie has a lot of text on the screen. It tells you Jamie Foxx's Agent Fleury.
Sure. Characters' the FBI, names and their positions and so forth.
Which, in a weird sense, is sort of like it's trying to hold on to that newsreel, that all that realistic stuff that it starts with at the beginning. Now, it's not realistic visually, but it is, like, the audio. I mean, that is, like, from news reports and historical documentaries and things. And so then it sort of tries to maintain this weird sort of documentary style, at least by throwing the text on there, which I, to a degree, had a bit of a problem with, because it was kind of like it was sort of trying to still tell you that this is a realistic type scenario or something. And then as the film goes on, eventually it stops doing that because you've been introduced to everybody, and then it becomes a much more interesting sort of character study about this colonel in the Saudi National Guard, or I think maybe he's just the police.
Right.
And Jamie Foxx's character, and the supporting characters are good. Chris Cooper is good in this. He's not just doing another I'm a spook, did with the Bourne movie and a couple other movies.
It's almost a more lighthearted role for him.
It is.
He still plays with gravity, but he's also more mouthy and snappy.
And he's better at stuff like that. I think my favorite role that he was ever in was Adaptation. I liked him.
He's versatile. He's very versatile.
I'm done with fish, you know. Jason Bateman is different in it. You wouldn't, expect him, and he's kind of the comic relief, but at the same time, I didn't have as much of a problem seeing Bateman in that role as I think maybe a lot of people are going to have.
I just see Michael Bluth.
Yeah, Arrested Development, and they're going to be confused about, they're going to keep thinking there's some tongue-in-cheek stuff going on there. And so it didn't...
Yeah, they didn't ever mention selling houses to Saddam Hussein.
They didn't. So that part I didn't have a problem with. Jeremy Piven shows up and plays this sort of State Department diplomat type, and he's essentially playing the character from Entourage, if you've seen it, or just about any Jeremy Piven character. Yep. I mean, I'm sure he's got a better range, and he's probably done some more interesting stuff.
The only reason he was in it because it was, Very Bad Things. They have a connection.
Yeah, and his character was just sort of weird comic relief, but he seems really out of place. That character seemed unrealistic for the rest of the movie, because, like, he gets all sick when he sees a dead body. And if he's been living there in that kind of environment, you'd think that he would have been exposed to a little more stuff.
He's been in a sanitized office.
I would think on some level he has been, but at the same time, even if you're there for, like, months on end, eventually you're going to get desanitized on some level. And his sort of cynicism or whatever it is, his happy-go-lucky attitude would hinder. So I had problems with that character. The Jennifer Garner character was fine, but there wasn't a lot for her. She probably could have been used a little more effectively, I think. But at the same time, it would become too much of an ensemble piece. I think it's pretty clear that Jamie Foxx is supposed to be the lead character. But at the same time, this colonel in the Saudi army is a much more interesting character, I think, because he's coming from an environment that at least I'm less familiar with. But at the same time, you're given information about him.
And he's the one who sticks his neck out.
Yeah.
And, tries to... stand up for something that's right in the face of the red tape and everything that he has to go through in his daily
life.
Both
the red tape and sort of just the peer, lack of peer approval. Yeah. I mean, his peer group might very well be people that are trying to kill him or kill the Americans. Another thing that's towards the end, it has a pretty intense action sequence. I mean, it's nothing super intense. I think they're overselling it in the ads, but it's pretty good. You know, you're kind of into it for the last half an hour. That's not to say that
I thought it was pretty intense. I was extremely suspenseful during that.
Oh yeah, time. Yeah. I was waiting for things to happen, but I didn't find that the rest of the movie was so dry and boring that the shift to that sequence at the end, was super dramatic to me. You know what I mean? It was like going from a seven to an eight or a nine.
I thought they did a decent job of actually staging it so that there is another action sequence before the big huge shootout thing,
mm-hmm.
That kind of lets you know they're ratcheting it up. You know, it's not just like it goes clunk and it climbs a cliff to this action.
And there's a pretty decent amount of tension.
Building
throughout the movie, and what happens at the beginning, it lets you kind of know that all bets are off potentially. There were things at the end where, you know, you weren't sure what was going to happen, but then you kind of were. I mean, I don't know. I think I would give it a pretty fair rating. And this is coming from someone who's usually pretty weary of sort of even ham-fisted or subtle, like, political commentary movies. And this one, I think, kept it minor enough. It wasn't hitting you over the face. It didn't seem like it was being super preachy. It was just kind of saying, this is a situation. This kind of thing can happen.
I thought it was refreshing. First of all, I was very entertained by it, and that's the most important thing to me. I look at that, and then I say that you know, I did have problems with the pace in the first. In the second act, it really slowed down, and there was people talking and standing around by crash sites or bomb sites and.
Hmm.
When it really started moving, though, I thought it became pretty top-notch as far as the political action thriller type thing can go. I thought it was refreshing to see a viewpoint other than the tried-and-true Siriana one, which is America is a huge evil Satan empire who has, you know, their hands in everything, and they're the reasons for all the problems in the world, AIDS, cancer, oil problems, terrorism. It's the basic idea you get from any film by anyone who's going to win an Oscar. And it gets tiresome. It gets really tiresome. And I think that I was really pleased that... I wasn't pleased with the message of it, which, as I mentioned, kind of seemed to be that, you know, any four highly trained guys from America come in and basically do a Steven Seagal scene where you can kill as many terrorists as you want without getting shot. And
I had a problem with that ending,
you know,
too.
I mean, yeah.
Because they weren't, they were FBI agents, and they weren't all these, like, it's you got to know where they were specifically from the text things. They weren't all, like, the high-end,
special agents.
One of them was a bomb person, but they ended up all, like, being really, like, high-end.
Adept,
like,
with automatic weapons.
And being able to just, like, set up in a pretty improvised
I think what they were trying to show in that sequence, though, because you notice that they were the ones doing formations and tactical things and cover fire and all this stuff that the Saudis around them were not doing.
Yeah. Well, the terrorists weren't.
Well, but they were Saudi terrorists. Yeah. Yeah, the police were doing it. You could see the police.
Had competence.
Exactly.
They were not portrayed as bumbling
and
or idiotic.
No, they weren't at all. They weren't at all. They were portrayed as being handcuffed by the, you know, the everything they have to go through in their country and all this stuff. I think it's definitely something that would foment discussion between people of different political ideologies. Because I think people will see different things in it because...
Yeah, they could read it as kind of a jingoistic
movie. Oh, totally.
On some
level. And I think that you could also say that there was a failure. But, you know, you mentioned at the end there's a couple of phrases spoken by two different people, and they both mirror each other, and they're both kind of ominous.
Yeah.
They're ominous.
They're ambiguously ominous, which is the best kind of cop-out for a movie that tries to take on a large role.
I liked it because I kind of just expected it to end at that point and just be like, here's some credits. But going like that, it was almost like it did feel a little tacked on just because the tone of the rest of the movie wasn't anything like that.
No.
But it also made you go back and rethink the motives of the main characters because
that's true.
Because you're kind of watching Jamie Foxx's character thinking this guy just has this kind of revenge motive and he wants to protect America and he wants to do this and this and this, and then you realize that he might have actually had a little bit of a kind of
character changes because of the relationship with the colonel.
It does.
You see that
it
he
does.
Sees that
yes.
the colonel is actually a good guy, and
yeah.
I think that was to me that was some of the. The movie has a lot more humor in it than I was really expecting.
It did, and that was something I had a problem with in the beginning. A lot of scenes were ended with somebody making a joke to somebody, and then would kind of hold on the other person smiling kind of sadly, because
yeah.
it's all in the wake of one of their friends
yeah,
being killed
exactly.
in the beginning. But yeah, they kind of offset that by a lot of stuff, and that's something I would expect from the Peter Berg thing, because, I mean, another one he directed was The Rundown, that Rock movie.
Oh, he did that.
Yeah, and I was also... I really enjoyed that, and that
I
was actually really
too,
good
yeah.
stylistically as well. I think he's a good stylistic director, and I think he's gotten stronger
he's
as he's gone
overly
along.
Overly stylistic, though.
He's not overly. He's good with it. He's good with it. Yeah,
he's pretty good about it. So we both agree that The Kingdom is actually a pretty good movie, and we haven't heard the big reviews from everybody. I'm actually much more interested now to see the Redford movie because of the writer. Because. Listened to it and said that he likes that we talk about movies we're watching, like while we're watching them, like Cherry 2000 over here.
Yeah, I'm the reason I just put this on is because The Scarlet Letter is coming on.
It's fantastic.
A really terrible version of The
so
Scarlet
anyway,
Letter.
If you want to send in your email comments,
oh, is that Jeff Fahey?
You can do that. No, I always thought it was Don Johnson, but it's not. I don't think it's. He was in Miami Vice though. He was like the other guy in Miami Vice. Oh, there's Doll Man.
Yeah.
Who was also in Iron Eagle 1. The kid. It was the kid's dad. To save him.
Those guys were wearing some short shorts right there.
Sure were.
Did you see that guy's balls? Mm. Yeah, they were weird.
Okay. Did you want to do weird movies now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so in keeping with the review that we just did for The Kingdom, I'm going to talk about The Delta Force with Chuck Norris.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you calling it The Delta Force or are you calling it Delta Force?
The Delta Force.
I think it's Delta Force.
Oh, okay. I wrote Delta Force, actually.
But you said The Delta Force.
Yeah, I was trying to be more dramatic. Anyway, so if you haven't seen it, it's got Chuck Norris. It's got Lee Marvin. It's got Robert Vaughn. It's got...
Can't go wrong with Robert Vaughn.
George Kennedy.
George Kennedy.
It's got George Kennedy in it.
Are you talking the George Kennedy from Naked Gun?
From Naked Gun, from
Cool Hand Luke.
Luke,
yeah.
Yeah,
is this LaFemme Nikita? What is this movie?
This is Cherry 2000.
What is Cherry 2000? It looks terrible.
The guy is going to try
to get... Why does that guy have cherry Kool-Aid all over his face?
Replacement parts for his sex doll, and he has to go into the Badlands, and Melanie Griffin is this, like, bounty hunter that helps him try to do it. And
she's a bounty hunter?
It's very cyberpunk.
Melanie Griffith is the most retarded... person
yeah,
on the face
I'm
of the earth.
I'm not defending the movie, I'm just trying to explain
it. When did you have time to write and direct this film?
God damn it.
Thank you, Seth.
Yeah, thank you, Seth. Oh, by the way, Seth did not send in his email vote, but I'm going to go ahead and just, I mean, so I won't close the polls on our first
okay.
pitch.
No, it's pretty much closed,
but,
man.
But Seth says that that your idea is much better because Gary Busey in a wig and my idea being called Time Striker. And even though I did that, but can't you just hear Ian McShane say, "You are the Time Striker"? And he's like, "Yeah, I can." And that's why. Big old thumbs down.
Did he like my idea of calling it Time Striker and spelling it completely like Wild Stallions?
No.
Did you tell him that? I mean,
he
that was
heard
in
it.
There, right?
Yeah.
Time Striker, really?
No. QZ.
Did he think of a name for the Gary Busey, Isaac Newton biopic?
He liked the last touch again.
Yeah,
the
rolling
apple,
the apple on the edge of the cliff.
Gravity.
Isn't that great?
It's good stuff. So
gravity's
I think
a bitch, isn't it?
We'll declare that
and
you're
then he could call him a foul name.
We can. I'm hesitant to declare you're the winner because I'm thinking people are going to make. If the podcast is more popular, people will want to know that they can still vote on some of these older ones. So I'll give
right.
it a couple more
okay.
weeks.
All right.
Anyway, so the Delta Force with Chuck Norris, or just Delta Force.
Shelley Winters, Joey Bishop.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Martin
people.
Balsam.
Yeah, it's
Robert Forster, young Robert Forster.
Essentially these.
Not young, but
these. I think they're, I don't know what, they might be Iranian. The Iranian terrorists take over this plane.
It says Arab here.
Yeah, it's generified because it's the 80s. and they hijack this plane, and then they try to they bring all these people, and eventually the Delta Force gets called in, and they go into the country, you know, with like a, what the hell is it, a C-47, the huge one, the huge planes. You know, Chuck shows up just at the last minute because he's like semi-retired or something. They call him in just for a special meet, you know, situation. And him and Lee Marvin go and they kick ass. And Chuck has missiles on his motorbike.
Right.
And it's got
Why wouldn't he?
It's got like an awesome like 80s like 100% Casio produced soundtrack that, you know, when you're a kid in the 80s, you're just your favorite thing in the world. You know, it's just it's got a great car chase scene through some Middle Eastern looking city where they're driving like a Volkswagen bus or something and shooting Uzis out of it. Yeah, so I would say watch The Kingdom, then watch Delta Force. And I mean, and that's just, that's a good combination right there. It's like watching Blade Runner and watching Brazil, or I don't know, I'm good at combinations, so that's my recommendation, my weird movie, Delta Force. It's better than you'll think it will be. You'll think it will just be a generic Chuck Norris action movie, but like he just said, there's Shelley Winters, there's George Kennedy, there's a lot that goes on in the dynamics between the terrorists and the people that are being hijacked, and it's not just all on a plane, but a portion at the beginning is on the plane, and then it does switch gears into a different mode. I don't know, it's a better, it's a good 80s action movie. That's about the, as opposed to...
How's the violence level?
It's 80s action violence, so, you know, people get blown up and stuff. It's not terribly gruesome, but people do get killed, like, right in front of you a few times. There is people getting beat up a little, but it doesn't. I mean, it's rated R, obviously.
Oh, okay,
it
good.
Isn't fire on all cylinders in terms of the kind of stuff you'd see now.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to do a weird movie.
Good.
Okay.
Go with it.
Bram Stoker's Dracula, directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
Okay, about the last probably good thing he's done. He hasn't done much in a long time.
You know what? I'm not going to say it's good. I'm actually going. I'm going to bring this one up because I thought it was so strange.
Mm-hmm.
That I've seen it multiple times, and every time I watch it, it's like I'm watching it for the first time, because it has the vaguest string of a plot, and instead it's like one of the main characters shows up at this weird set piece, and I've read Bram Stoker's Dracula,
yeah,
and it's done in the form of these letters,
mm-hmm.
And it's that even that, with just letters written from one character to someone you don't ever know about, those end up being a stronger like string of a plot than,
yeah,
what the movie was for some reason. Like, because it follows most of the main characters still. It follows the Keanu Reeves inexplicably is
yeah,
is the main guy.
He's the guy that goes to.
And then Van Helsing is
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. And they make him totally over the top. He really went over the top in it. I seem to remember that last time I watched it was a couple years ago. But Gary Oldman was just an a nutcase, and he looked like my friend Micah as he drives to work. I don't think I've told the story on the air. Not that we're technically on the air, but one day he was working at a Ray's food place right over there,
yeah, McKinley,
and I was driving like back from work, and I passed him, and he was wearing the Gary Oldman Dracula glasses, the round like blue frame, like,
yeah,
blue lens, you know, like. And
do those have the ear things, or are they just like they clip to your nose, like the Morpheus glasses?
He had ear things, but that's what they looked like.
Yeah.
And he was wearing like a black trench coat and a black top hat somehow in his car. Like, I'm not sure how, like, it was, maybe it was one of those accordion top hats. I don't know.
That would have looked pretty funny. What kind of car does he drive?
Well, back then he was driving a Saturn. It was like, it's like a gold Saturn. He got a truck now. Micah update. He got a truck. No one cares.
No one cares.
So I talked to him, and you know, later on, like the next day or something, I was like, I saw you driving to work, you know, it was some sort of like pre-Halloween dress up day,
mm-hmm,
you know, because you looked really freaky. And he was like, no, I just decided to wear that to work. And the thing is, you have to wear like a prescribed uniform at,
yeah,
Ray's, so that means he wore it, he put
and
that stuff
to
on
change.
He put that crap on to drive literally 1 minute to Ray's, and then had to take it off.
Well, he was probably, like, he knew that the other employees would see that, right? Because he'd have to walk
I
in
looking
like
that.
I think
he said he took it off in the car.
Oh, well, that's pointless.
So he put on this, like, gay Dracula vampire outfit in the car, or right before he got in the car, and then he took it off before he got out of the car for, like, a 1.5-minute car ride.
Hmm.
So Bram Stoker's Dracula was a weird movie. The end.
But you're saying it was not a good movie?
No, here's the thing. It is so...
I don't remember it being hard to follow.
It's not hard to follow.
I think it's kind of like... It switches who the narrator is,
but here's
though,
the thing. You expect... You know, it does, and it does it frequently, which kind of follows the book. But here's the thing. You expect an adaptation of something not done in a regular narrative format to be done in such a way that you follow it the regular movie way when you're watching the film.
Yeah.
And that's almost completely constant across the board. That's almost always going to happen because you can't have inner voice this and this and this, you know. And I don't remember if they had voiceovers, like where someone, like, they would start speaking like the letter type thing, then it would go into the story, you know, that old...
I think
they did, yeah.
There were voiceovers. I remember Gary Oldman, like, doing some voiceover stuff, talking about how, you know, the myth of the vampires can't walk in the daylight. The truth is you can, but you need to sort of protect yourself from the sun. And on foggy London days, what difference does it make, you know?
And then the style, in terms of, like, set decoration and the costume and all that stuff, especially Gary Oldman's stuff, so strange looking.
Yeah, his style was
a little
weird.
And the acting, so over the top. And... gosh, it was just like, you know, and then like after all that, you would expect, okay, this was just done by some hack guy who they just handed it to, and then you're like Francis Ford Coppola, who's directed a couple of the most memorable, important films.
But here's the thing, he did those.
And Jack,
but like, okay, I think you can name the Coppola movies that are good, and not even use all the fingers on one hand.
There's like three of them.
Yeah, you did Godfather, now. Godfather 2, Apocalypse Now, The Outsiders.
I've never seen it,
but I've heard it's good. It's got a big cast.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine it was good source material. That's four. I'm racking my brain. He just hasn't done it. He's kind of gotten Kubrick-esque at this point.
I think just overall, you know, like, it's just one of those things that strikes you as, like, literally. You know, a lot of these things we call these, like, weird movies are either some sort of underrated or overrated or some other type of thing.
Yeah.
Or something that wasn't critically received or something that wasn't popularly received while the other way around. And this was just a case of you watch it and it's a strange film.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you read the source material, all that stuff, it just comes across as this probably doesn't really work as a movie.
I think for me watching it, I think I had read the book, and I had even seen the high school play version of it.
The Conversation.
Oh,
great!
I haven't seen that yet. But
fantastic,
that's right.
Really fantastic. One of my favorite films, actually. I don't know how that didn't, you know, it slipped my mind.
So that's five. So okay, you could probably do it with a whole hand. Quote of the day there.
He wrote Patton.
Yeah, he co-wrote Patton, which I enjoy. But I remember being just kind of graphic. It had a lot of, like, nudity in it and stuff. And
it did.
I think maybe I was comparing it to the scary, you know, Bela Lugosi version.
He directed Captain EO.
That's right. He directed Captain EO, too. I had read a version of the book. Is it really short? Because I know I read something.
It's pretty
short.
It's like 150 pages or something like that.
Maybe I did read it, but I was really young.
I could be selling it
fourth grade or
something. It's easy to read in like one sitting, basically, if you sat down for a couple hours.
Basically between Hardy Boys books during silent reading in fourth grade.
I read all those. Good stuff. Peggy Sue got married.
So I thought it was just a... I don't know. It was graphic and it was strange and it was kind of scary, but then you end up identifying with him. Because he's the narrator in parts of it, and that was different. I think that was one of the first times when it was like the narrator is the monster, is the bad guy. And I was still into horror movies because I used to enjoy horror movies more than I do now.
Well, you know, and it started with that really gothic, like, it's like set piece thing where he it was like it was like in like an abbey, and he comes in and he renounces, you know, God, and like is really theatrical about it. And from that moment, that's where I was like, this is going to be over the top and strange. And I knew it, and it ended up following that. But
yeah.
I think I mostly owe it to Oldman. But bad casting. Keanu Reeves should never be in a film like this. Neither should Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir. Like, they both talk like with this California Valley girl thing, you know? That's just a case of just poor casting for this sort of thing.
And Doug
won't
hunt.
Hopkins is going to be good in anything you cast him in, pretty much. He can do all of it.
He's competent, yeah, for sure.
Totally,
and beyond. He was good in Free Jack.
And I like Oldman, even when he's over the top. I like when actors go over the top because they're trying, damn it, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're putting up with their mark on it. Or they're just trying to have fun.
Or, no, I think actors get blamed a lot for performance when really that's the director's job. Fault.
I saw the preview for a fantastic film this evening. Listen.
Okay.
So it's based on a Clive Barker short story.
Ooh, creepy.
It's based on a Clive Barker short story, which is the problem.
Is it Rawhead? Did they remake it Rawhead?
It's called Midnight Meat Train. I swear to you, that's the name of the film. They didn't change the name.
That trailer was for the Good Luck Chuck crowd.
Bradley Cooper, who was the bad guy in Wedding Crashers, the guy named Sack. It's not Zach, it's Sack. You know that?
I don't remember the bad guy.
Rachel McAdams' jerk boyfriend.
Oh, that guy, yeah. That, okay, I know. He was on Alias. Yes. He was in like the first three seasons or something. Yeah.
He was?
Yeah, he was the reporter. He was your friend.
Oh, okay, okay.
He kind
of
had a thing for her, and then
okay, nothing really got happened. It, yeah. Bradley Cooper. So he's like a photographer, and he happens to be on a subway one night, and he's taking a picture of a woman, like a car away. And in the background, some big guy is walking up behind her and then, like, bashes her head in with a meat tenderizer. And he freaks out. And he's like, whoa! And he like, and then the trailer, it's like, he tries to show his girlfriend. She's like, well, you got to show us to the police. And he's talking to the police, and they're like, well, you were stalking this woman? And cutting back and forth, like, getting frustrating for the guy and everything. And in the meanwhile, it shows all these clips, and you start to see who the person's face, the killer. It's Vinnie Jones. They don't show his name in the credits. Mm-hmm. They show Bradley Cooper for some reason, and you know, this and this. Gosh, who else was in it? Brooke Shields? What? I didn't see her in the... Okay, anyway.
Maybe she's like
they keep saying
the...
Clive Barker over and over.
She's probably like the psychiatrist.
She might have been,
something
like that. And they just keep showing shots of Vinnie Jones. And I'm sorry. Vinnie Jones is just like every role he has been in so far has been the same. This hard-nosed guy who gets in your face and speaks these...
He's odd, yeah.
These mean catchphrases.
He's
and then says
desert
these catchy
eagle,
little things. Yeah.
5.0.
Yeah. Your two little balls there. Mm-hmm. They're going to shrivel up. I want to... this. Yeah. And I see that yours says...
Replica.
Yeah, replica on the side. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. No, it's Demi Moore pouring water sensual. Oh, did you see
that?
That
was so suck to have to take a bath like that.
That was the,
It would take him forever.
Ooh, wow. We're making all these noises. Yeah, gosh, Midnight Meat Train. So anyway, after this whole thing, I was like, this actually looks kind of cool because... It's like this guy has, like, a meat hook in one part, and you can kind of tell it's a butcher thing. He says, I think what's happening is this guy's killing women he's been watching on the subway when they're alone, and then he's getting rid of the body by putting them in meat lockers somewhere.
Like that episode of Full Metal Alchemist or something.
Yeah, and so
freezer.
And then and I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of cool. And then it goes, Midnight Meat Train. I started laughing. and Kristen doesn't like scary movies, and so she was sitting the whole time and kind of like wincing and like looking away. And I think she put her hand up over her eyes at one point. Like, she doesn't even want to see trailers for scary movies. And so she was like, and then it said Midnight Meat Train. And I started laughing. She's like, are you kidding? Like, Midnight Meat Train? They couldn't have come up with a better name. I understand that you're basing off a Clive Barker thing, but all you have to do is say based on a story by Clive Barker, and all the built-in Clive Barker audience will already see it. You don't have to call it what he called it.
No.
Call it something else, anything. Something to do with photography, something to do with meat, something to do with butchery, something to do with stalking. I don't know. Anything to do with any of the trains, anything to do with the themes. Instead, it's Midnight Meat Train. Okay,
they should call it... Well, it's late at night, right? It's on a train, and the guy's like a butcher or something, right?
Yeah.
Alliteration usually sells. How about Midnight Meat Train? Huh? Sound good?
I like your style.
Okay. That joke isn't funny anymore. It's too close to home and it's too near the bone. It's too close to home and it's too near the bone. We'll be right back.
you should go to pitch time?
We can do pitches. Let me see. I got a little note here for my pitch. Let me just do mine because it's overly involved.
You do yours.
Not really. Okay, so we're trying to stick in with the political action thriller genre. And here's what I've got written down for my notes for my pitch. Okay, this is about the drug wars. It's kind of a little bit like Patriot Games, but not Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger. Only a little bit. Here we go. The antagonists are the drug cartels and the CIA. CIA director, and they're working against this scientist and this like legalization activist. Who, you know, basically the thing is that it's about how drug cartels are working with the CIA to keep people oppressed. And, you know, as long as they're illegal, then they can also put people in jail. It's like a win-win for them. They get people addicted to drugs. And because they're so illicit, it's not like you can have a day job and then still afford to buy them and then use them occasionally and stuff. It's like, you know, you basically created a whole underclass of people through, which I think a lot of people have actually argued is true, that the CIA really did like introduce crack into these. So I'm playing on that whole thing. It also gets into the whole idea, the whole concept of freedom of choice and like libertarian politics about, you know, whether things should be legal or just let people do what they will with it. So I'll have like the obligatory, like doped up mother and kid dies, and so then the activist ends up taking care of the other kid or something kind of thing happen in it. That it could play on the whole Brave New World idea with the Soma, controlling the masses and everything. Okay, so for the CIA director, who's the main bad guy, I've got Ronnie Cox. For the drug cartel guy, I'm bringing him back, Robert Davi, okay. As drug dealer guy. For the scientist, it's Ralph Fiennes, back to English Patient. And for the activist, it's Jennifer Connelly. And that's my pitch, and it's called, possibly called Just for the Taste of It, because of cocaine.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Like Diet Coke.
So the cocaine has to be diet in some way.
Yes, but it's about, basically about, like, well, why hasn't this been legalized, or why can't, you know, what's the big deal?
Rated R?
Turns out, of course it's rated R.
Gratuitous nudity?
Jennifer Connelly-based nudity?
My gosh, man. Have you seen Mulholland Falls?
That's the one that's about, like, the A-bomb or something, right?
No. It's isn't about, well, it might have been, I don't know.
Is all it Nick Nolte in it?
Yeah, all I remember is that she has, like, they were like, they're like torpedoes. They're like the, gosh, man. Anyway.
Okay.
I had a thing for her for a while.
I think everybody did. Started the labyrinth and just kept going.
Yeah, just, man.
Did she Requiem for a Dream?
Yes.
With Keith David?
Yeah. David Keith? You mean David Keith?
No, no. I mean Keith, no, I know David. Keith David. Who does? He's doing all the voiceover work for the new Ken Burns documentary, The War.
The main narration.
Yeah, he's doing like the main narration because he does all.
Are
the
they
army.
Still doing the thing where the other actors, where actors do other voices?
No, I don't know.
That's
what
he's done
doing.
For everything else.
I think it sounds like it's mainly just Keith David talking, describing. But the thing is, he does all the army ads too, so it's a weird. Kind of
right.
Thing, because it's like you're used to hearing him say, like, you know.
You know what they should have done? They should have gotten Keith David to do the various narration, and then all the voiceovers for like the letters and stuff mm-hmm. to be done by David Keith.
That could have worked.
Yeah, and then Keith Carradine could have executive produced it, mm-hmm. and David Carradine could have also co-executive produced. Okay, here's my pitch.
Okay, so first of all, you can vote for mine. Just for the taste of it.
Don't bother.
I have a feeling that at some point we're going to be getting a lot of emails. So in the subject line, you could just simplify it and say, like, podcast vote, colon,
I'm going to take a
Ian,
chug of PBR before I
or
go.
Zach, depending on the one you like the most. Mine's the drug cartel, CIA, conspiracy, / scientist and activist, you know, freedom of choice thingamajig.
Yes.
A lot of shooting in Central and South America. Oh, that's what I wanted you to remind me about. Brazil. Bossa Nova soundtrack done by modern bands. All like Antonio Carlos Jobim songs, you know, like mm-hmm. Girl from Ipanema and stuff, but like covered by like crappy bands like Fall Out Boy and shit like that. It'd be fantastic.
Okay, here's mine.
Okay. No comments on the soundtrack? Good soundtrack.
I don't care about soundtracks. Soundtracks, after Batman Forever, you can't top it.
That's true. Kiss from a Rose.
Kiss from a Rose on a Grave. You want me to sing that whole song right now?
I don't think you can.
I can. I know every word. Every word of that song.
Why was the guy reading the screw
so
tape?
Now you know so much he can say. You. I'm not going to sing it.
No.
Okay. We start with, imagine this. We open on some rice paddies in somewhere in Korea.
Okay.
Even though I don't know if they have rice paddies.
North Korea or South Korea?
Let's say it's North Korea.
Mm. There isn't a difference.
And this is the...
There is a difference.
Early 70s.
Okay.
Late 60s, early 70s. And this young boy...
So the Vietnam conflict is still going on, but this is Korea.
Don't add your own foibles to my thing here.
Okay.
Okay, so this kid is out there training in the rain. He's learning some stuff, doing his martial arts. His older half-brother comes up and starts picking on him. What are you doing? It says it in subtitles because they can't speak English yet. Shoves him, right? He says, what are you doing this stupid crap for? You should be helping me train for the Red Army. And he says, I don't want to join the Red Army. I want to do something important. I want to be a movie star. I want to do something great. And he says, well, you're never going to be great. You're nothing. You're trash. And he beats the crap out of him. Then the younger brother's like, ah, and he gets all beat up. His father dies. The kid, the stepbrother, half-brother, whatever it is, runs off because the father was like kind of abusive toward the younger brother. The younger brother and his mother get to America somehow, right? They immigrate. So we kind of move through time. This younger brother, who's the main protagonist, let's call him Park. Chan-ho Park. Chan-ho Park was a pitcher for the Dodgers for many years, and now I think he was on the Texas Rangers the last few years. That's the only Korean name I can even think of. Chan-ho Park, which I think is Park Chan-ho in Korean. It's backwards. They flip it.
Yep.
Okay, so Chan-ho Park. Gosh, I can't do this. Gary Oldman's making out with Demi Moore. This is just rowdy.
Whew. So orange, too.
It's orange, man. This is orange.
It's like everybody's...
They rubbed an orange on the filter.
Eating too many carrots and too many...
Maybe we've just eaten too many carrots and we're seeing it like this because we've got too much beta carotene running through
our systems.
Yeah. Vitamin whatever.
I got too much something. I think it's vitamin A.
Okay.
I'm not going to look it up and correct it for the show notes.
Anyway.
Somebody else can do it.
So Chan-ho Park grows up in America. Everyone notices he's got these great martial arts skills, right? He's got some Huarang Do. He's got some Taekwondo. He joins the military, and he becomes a war hero. He saves some people. We get some flashes of these scenes of war.
Because he
joins the Marines. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. He's the only war hero of Grenada.
He's the only one. He actually was able to find some bad guys, and he was the only one who beat anyone down. He beat them up. He helped out in the Iran-Contra thing.
Okay. It's a good one.
Did all that stuff. He's the one who, when those hijackers, hijacked some people, which I'm sure happened almost every year in the 80s, he solved some of that. He became a war hero.
Fantastic.
Using his fists, his feet, he was fantastic.
His mind, his wit.
He was a rapist wit. He was a bundle of weapons. His every muscle in his body was coiled as a... Okay. So he, he decides, this martial arts stuff is great, but I still want to be a film star. He can't cut it. He can't act. But he finds out that he makes a speech one day, and everyone listens to him because he's talking about he becomes anti-war because he's seen the horrors of it because one of his best friends in the army was killed. And so someone says, listen, you should run for office. And he's like, well, I wasn't born an American and stuff. And they say, well, it doesn't really matter. You can run for lower offices.
Yeah, the only thing you can do is become president if you're not born in the United States of America.
He moves up. A rocket rise to the top.
Obama-esque.
New legislature is passed.
On behalf
saying,
of him?
No. Well, it's kind of pushed there. It's a little bit of Shades of Arnold thing here.
Mm-hmm.
People say, listen, this guy is the best candidate we've had in years and years and years. We're going to make it so that you can be foreign-born and be president of America.
Which
of the United States.
Party? Or do you care? Does it matter?
He runs on an independent ticket.
Oh, he's just balls sure. to the yeah. whole system.
Red Party. Not the Green Party. The Red Party. No, he's not communist. He loves America. I love America. That sounds like a Korean. That's not like Korean
at all.
That's
one of your French Asian people.
I love America.
Accents, right? Like your friend's girlfriend or whatever.
Oui, oui. I love America so much. So he becomes president, right? He's mm-hmm. now president. Meanwhile, back home, half brother. I'm going back way over the time limit, but it's okay.
No, that's fine.
His half brother, the evil half brother, has risen to power in the Red Korean Army.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there whispering to Kim Jong Il or whoever was in charge at the time. Man, we gotta go. And there's a Kuwait-like country who has some resources near North Korea. It's not South Korea. It's another one. And they decide, listen, we're gonna drop in these guys.
Cambodia.
Sure. And there's a significant U.S. force there.
Mm-hmm.
During all this time that the Chan Ho Park is president, the left-wing senators are railing against U.S.
Imperialist might.
Yeah, being anywhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, at the same time, the right-wing senators are saying, listen, there's world war gearing up. There's going to be some big stuff going down. So we got to instate a draft where everyone can get sucked into this draft. Am I right? So not exempting anyone
okay.
whatsoever, not even politicians. They want to show that everyone can do this. And they mostly say that for show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some people who don't like the president. Here's what happens. So while they're railing against this, the president doesn't want to speak up because knows his brother's involved. He kind of wants to stay out of this as much as he can, which is putting him in a tough position. He gets drafted, right? He has to end up going back over there, and he ends up being the best soldier, even though he's the president of the United States. And he ends up hand-to-hand combating the entire North Korean Red Army. At the very end, he gets to his brother, who's also turned into this awesome kick.
Ending in the DMZ, right?
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly.
Smoke and
yes. And his
ash.
Brother has turned into a world-class kickboxer.
Uh-huh.
And so he's got his you know, tiger yeah. style, and his brother's got the raven style. And they have this incredible final showdown. This happens, and these guys get punched and stuff, and
it looks like something.
The entire army,
the North Star,
the entire U.S. Army, all of them are behind Chan Ho Park, and his brother Park Chan Ho is on the other side, and yeah. the entire Red Army is behind him, and they both say, "No, this is between us,"
mm-hmm.
and they hold back the army. The armies all hold each other back, right? They want to shoot their guns, but they don't do it.
Of the honor.
They have this final fight. And the brother says something like, you know, he beats his older brother. He's like, yeah. And the older brother falls to his knees and he goes, you finally beat me. You've earned my respect. I'm sorry. We'll withdraw our troops. And he's like, thank you, brother. You've honored me. And he turns around and starts walking away. And the brother pulls a gun out of his pants, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and so he's on the edge of a cliff, right? So Chan Ho Park turns around and he rolls an apple at him. The apple causes too much weight, and the guy falls to his death off the edge of the cliff. No!
Uh-huh.
And he says something like, ain't gravity a bitch? No, he'll be better than that. He ends up having to kill his brother, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Koreans bow to him. And basically, at the end of the movie, is that the U.S. annexes North Korea as the 51st U.S. state, and everyone's cool at that point.
And South Korea
and
becomes like a giant resort?
Yeah, yeah. The name of the film is Fist of the Oval Office. Rated, I'm going to say PG-13 for the kids.
Rated PG-13. in.strope@gmail.com. You know the email, people.
Instead of a midsummer sex comedy, a middle school sex comedy, rated NC-17.
Yeah, it would have to be, wouldn't it? Like the new Ang Lee movie.
It could be called First Blood. Such a good idea. It's First Blood.
Man.